Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And we're back with episode 128 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan. I almost got there.
You are correct.
I almost fumbled that a little bit. We're going to be really current and talk about the new TV shows Taxi. And I hear there's a Lifetime special movie about bears. I don't know.
Yeah. You should see the wedding episode of Quincy M.E. if you haven't yet. Mm. Wow.
Wow.
Mind-blowing revelations.
I hear it is must-see TV.
I actually found out the other day, for some reason, I was looking up Quincy M.E. Vec Jack Klugman. And for years, I'd always thought it was Quincy M.D. just in my head,
too.
Even though he wasn't an M.D. But I realized, of course, it's Quincy M.E. For a medical examiner, I guess.
Right.
Quite unlike... Windows ME. I don't know.
Well, and see, now I realized when you said that, I was like, I realized I didn't actually make that switch in my head until Windows ME. And then I was like, oh, it's Quincy ME. No, it couldn't be, because that's Windows, right? That's
that's Windows.
It's Quincy Vista. That's the TV show.
Quincy XP.
Well, that's the sideshow where he just D&Ds and has a podcast about it.
That's right, and it runs really well.
Yeah,
Quincy Vista is where he becomes a tour guide and everything fucks up constantly because it's because it's Vista.
Anyway,
that's a weird overlap of jokes right there.
That really is just like that is just the sound of random. So let's see. Young Justice finished its first half of the season.
Right, with
so
a
we're
four
done until June.
Oh, that's a shame. But
well, we're
wait,
done
but...
until June, but
excuse me.
Not next week. The week after next, we will get Doom Patrol. So
Doom Patrol, go!
Oh Jesus! So we'll get there because we have to talk about that.
Yes, we do.
But they had four episodes. I gotta say, like they felt like the four most normal episodes of the show to date.
In some ways. Yeah.
I think it always, like, I mean, yes, there were big things, and all that, but, like, maybe it was just after the last week of just these three, like, hammer shows.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, it was, but they did some, I guess we're talking about Young Justice now. They did some unexpected things, like they introduced Cyborg into the mix.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't totally unexpected because I read a little thing saying Cyborg.
Yeah, we knew they were going to. But like again, that first episode, right?
Yeah, but it was
just like a mission.
Yes.
And just set up for like the next three. Like I think it was interesting that they seem to be actually planning the episodes in some sense for how they're streaming them. As in, like,
oh yeah,
like these four are a set, and that first one is just the introduction.
Yes. Now what? Oh my! What was the? What happened in the? It was episode 10, right? What happened in that one?
That was the Batman Katana Metamorpho.
Right.
Mission to Santa Prisca, which was fun.
Yes. Yes.
That
felt like a bit of a welcome, sort of a little missiony respite after, frankly, after the last three. That was. It felt like that part felt like a bit of a breather.
Mm-hmm. Which is something about the show that, like, that's a breather. But, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we just have the introduction to Victor Stone.
Right. And,
A little bit of scene set, which actually I think might be one of the few characters we've had an introduction to. Since, like, the first season, where it's like, here's Mao and eventually, like, you know, Bumblebee and all, like, we see them in passing,
mm-hmm.
but they don't really get that much work before suddenly they're heroes and you can but you still kind of know them.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting a Victor Stone Cyborg origin story.
Right. Like I said, like just it felt first season-y.
Yes. But
and not in a bad way.
No. But in some but also I have to say that the sort of the the transformation of Victor into Cyborg might have been one of, like, for a cartoon, that was just straight up horror. I mean,
Well,
it
the
was
whole
just.
cyborg thing, they did as horror. Like, not, I mean, yes, that, good Lord, that was the most gruesome thing they've done. But even later, like, they cast a lot of horror toward Cyborg. Which makes sense, because in the original, and it's funny, because, you know, in the original, in the 80s, when Cyborg was first invented, by, I believe, Marv Wolfman and George Perez in Titans, it was, he was just this kid, you know, very much like this, you know, whose father, same setup, but his father built him the cyborg body, you know, to replace, like, the bits of him that had been destroyed in this lab accident, and that was it. And then the New 52 happened, and suddenly it was a mother box was involved. I don't know that I've ever really liked that change, personally. Like, I don't know why. There's just something about it that feels weird to me.
Yeah, and I know that yeah, and they carry that over in the Justice League movie, if I
Right, in the
recall.
Justice League movie, yeah, that's because it's the thing now. It's just that's how we're doing this, and Young
Yes.
Justice does make a change to it.
Oh, and a very, and actually, I really like the change. I really like the notion of having, like, apocalyptic technology and the father box being sort of the sort of the tech behind Cyborg, because it means it's kind of horrific and evil.
Right, I mean that's it's changing it from a mother box to a father box is a big deal. So you have that, but that episode that has, you know, Cyborg being changed, also has something I love. It's stupid, but I love it. It does have the Violet and Forger go to school, which again mirrors like first season.
Very much. Yeah, that very much felt like first season, only just very, even more so. Like, I mean, as often happens with these shows, when you revisit sort of things that you find from, like, the early going in the show, they're usually doing it with a better understanding of character and how to run the show. So
Right.
it's sort of, instead of diminishing returns, you get sort of this richer and sort of more interesting sort of take on familiar material.
Yes. But it has that constant, you know, the Forger not understanding English quite right. So
That's
he
right.
keeps introducing himself weird, and now that he has his Fred Bug with two G's name,
Yes.
it just gets better. But it also introduces an interesting character from the comics, Harper Row.
Yeah, and I don't know who Harper Row is.
Okay.
I know the name. Like, as soon as she said I'm Harper Row, I'm like, okay, I know this is someone, but I couldn't remember who.
Yeah, originally she's from Gotham. And Batman saves her, or saves her brother, I think. And so she, like, basically would, like, find Batman tech around Gotham and started, like, training herself and all this, and became known as Bluebird, and kind of works with them for a little bit.
Interesting.
She has since in the comics retired just to actually live like a normal life. But I was just like, what the fuck, Harper Row? Like, what? I did not expect that to happen. As you I mean, again, like, and to go back to first season, like, there were a bunch of, like, there was, you know, like, Stephanie, I'm like, wait, but that's spoiler. Like, there's a lot of fun with that. And Fred Bug with two G's. Fred Bug with optional two G's later.
I'm finding I was at first I found Forager sort of quirks a little too quirky, but now that he's sort of like pretending to be human but very, very badly, this is like a great bit of joy.
Like, I always found them to be, like, almost, like, right on that line of, like, this could get annoying, but they never push it to actual annoying, for me at least. And it's like, it rides that line so perfectly. And again, yeah, the human bit would just, oh God, it just makes me laugh.
I
His
would
whole
like to.
discussion of being in the hive, in to the class and the school, just,
Yeah, that's pretty good.
yeah.
I would like to know what it is with Young Justice and the name Harper, Because, of course, you've got, like, you know, all the Harpers, and you've got Harper Row, and you've got Violet taking the Harper name. I'm like, how many Harpers are we going to get?
Well, I mean, to be fair, in the comics, there's, you know, Guardian, the original Guardian, Jim Harper, is mm-hmm. a relative of Roy Harper.
Right.
And we do have Harper Row, like, and that's it.
Okay, maybe I'm making too much out of it.
But maybe, actually, hold on, let me check.
I thought there was another Harper in there. At this point, I feel like Darkseid is going to say, hey, my name is Darkseid Harper, all is one in Harper, and then everybody becomes...
Well, no, but Halo, in the comics, and this is why they did it, at one point, she was known as Violet Harper. Which is, yeah, that's her original host, is Violet Harper. And then when the Force comes by and takes over... Like, because, you know, Violet Harper is killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then she becomes Halo. And I think that's when she takes... I forget if she keeps the name Violet Harper or... I forget how that worked. Or then becomes Gabrielle Doe afterward, because now she's a different person. So they're kind of playing that game in reverse with Young Justice. Which is cute, but that's why they had to do the Harper thing, because they wanted the Violet Harper name.
Gotcha.
It was just, it was a reach for them, but I appreciated it just for the, well, might as well.
Why not? I mean, it works for me that you've got this, you know, Karaki refugee, or immigrant who sort of like was killed and then sort of combined with a mother box and you get.
Well, and that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Because in the comics, it's, you know, Violet Harper is killed. And there's this alien energy entity that takes over her dead body. Which is why she becomes Gabrielle, and she becomes Halo. In this, it's Gabrielle gets killed, and an alien energy takes her over, and she becomes Violet Harper, but it's not some sort of like alien energy thing that we've never heard of. No, no, it's the soul of a mother box. Which is a brand new concept.
Which I really like.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I liked it, honestly. Until, and this is the whole, you know, with Cyborg being the father box and she can kind of cleanse him. But when they're doing that whole horror movie bit, because they're committed to the father box horror thing.
Mm-hmm.
When he's going on about how, you know, with the emotions, the mother box can't process them. And that's why she can't access her powers. And she suddenly hits that like, no, I don't get that. But the helping people thing is what we fucking do.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, yeah, no, okay, I'm in now. Like... I am on board with the mother boxness of this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Like, that's when it really worked for me, was that specific moment of just, okay.
I get it. Yep. No, I agree. No, that was, and that's also where the horror element comes in, when essentially Cyborg is stalking her through a darkened house and
right.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on the character. I mean, at the end, he says, "I think she's, you know, cleansed me permanently." But
yeah,
we'll see.
I think she pretty much has. Like, I would buy into that. But they just become very, very important to a fight with Darkseid.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what they are, right?
Right.
But in between that. Before we get to the end Cyborg bit and the whole Soul of Mother Box bit, we go back to Garfield Logan.
Wow.
And we get more history. And actually, you know, I was saying, like, oh, we don't get history of characters. He might have the most history on screen of any character in the show.
I think you may be right on that count.
And we get the what happened, because we kind of had the thumbnail, right?
Mm-hmm.
But exactly how he ended up on the show and as an actor and all that. And it is the darkest thing they have ever done. Hands down.
Yes. Yes, hands down.
The Teen Titans Go version of Doom Patrol is just fucked up.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Uh-huh. Well, it wasn't just that they had, you know, Doom Patrol Go. It was just that they were basically like that their song was all about going off to die.
Right.
It's like, we've got Doom in our name. Now, here we go. Off to die. I'm like, holy shit, people.
Did you catch? I actually had to rewind and catch it. Because I was like, I heard something. But when they march off to the little chant of, you know,
D-I-E, 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 right. And march off the camera. As they're leaving, Robot Man, very soft, he says, we're not going to make it.
Yes, yes, I heard that.
Just, it's so fucked up.
Oh, there's, and I mean, that was an episode that, I mean, vastly benefits having watched season two, for example. Also benefits you having watched Teen Titans Go. It's,
well,
it was just
also
like,
benefits, weirdly, from the voice change.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, season one and two, there was a different voice for Gar.
Right.
And for the season, they couldn't get him. And so they actually ended up just getting the guy who does the voice for Gar in every other bit of media, including Teen Titans Go.
Gotcha. Yes.
So, but holy, I can't imagine the meeting where they're like, so here's what I want to do. Let's just draw that up. I mean, to be fair, Young Justice kind of showed up in an episode of Teen Titans Go once.
Oh, that's what I've heard. I haven't seen it, but I've heard this. Yeah.
So that's a thing. Is this payback, I guess?
Jeez. Is it ever? Also a nice little bit of like cross promotion with the upcoming Doom Patrol show, I guess.
Sure.
In a really
Teen Titans Go movie.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be a Doom Patrol Go movie soon. It'll be very short.
Yes. And also we find out what the virtual goggles are, what the good goggles are there
right.
to do. So that particular penny finally dropped.
Yeah, to kind of the surprise of no one. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Like, it didn't feel like it was a reveal so much as a let's let the rest of the characters know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, as soon as you saw them, you knew that there was something wrong. And then when you knew it was Granny Goodness, made them were like, okay, this is going to screw people up big time.
Right. And of course, now that they know about that, we have the one other setup at the very end of the episode, which should come as a shock to no one who follows the comics at all. But, you know, now that we have Terra back and freed, that she's working with Deathstroke.
Right. Now, I didn't know that from the comics, but it did not surprise me when it happened.
Yeah, there's a very famous Teen Titans storyline called the Judas Contract.
Oh, God, of course. Sorry, I totally
which
forgot.
Is where the whole Terra being evil thing happens.
Of course.
Hopefully, they don't do it straight from the comics, because in the comics, it involved 14-year-old Terra in a romantic relationship with Deathstroke.
That's,
and
yes.
We would just like to just never have that be a thing again.
I think they will not do that.
You know, while I am very, very... I mean, again, I don't think they'll actually do it. But if anything would make me consider that maybe they are going to go for that fucked up, it's Doom Patrol Go. And...
True.
I'm like, you're going to do that? What aren't you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pedophilia. That's... Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty sure they won't. But if they do, I would have to sort of kind of consider.
I would be very surprised.
Yes. Yeah.
They also did mention the fact that like they are now looking at the possibility of season four.
Oh, sweet.
And that they're not actually planning it yet. You know, they don't have it. They don't know. But that it would involve a time jump. And I'm like, at some point you have to start, like, the Justice League has to start dying off at this rate.
Maybe it'll be set, like, in a retirement home for a super.
Well, I'm just saying, superhero. Like, eventually, because you have this problem of, like, and I could see it, but in about 10 years' time in the show, right? You have Bruce Wayne pretty much retired, or dead.
Mm-hmm.
You end up with Dick becoming Batman, and you have Damian as Robin. It works.
Yeah.
So, I'm kind of okay with it. I hope they take the slow road getting there.
Me too.
But I could see them doing it. Like, because they've shown you all the superhero kids now. Like, they have the show for We Jump 10 Years.
Hmm. Yes.
Like, that's the fucked up thing. Is they've actually built enough depth in this show that they could easily go 10 to 15 years into the future and it would still work.
Absolutely.
I don't want them to do it in, like, one step. That would be terrible. But yes, they could theoretically get there eventually. So, interesting thing, speaking of Young Justice and streaming. You know, it was like the most streamed show. Apparently, this is what, recently.
Yes, that's what I hear.
But also, they were talking about Titans numbers.
Oh.
And Titans gained audience every episode until it was like outdoing, like, I think Daredevil.
Wow. Because that's usually not how these things work.
Yeah. Like, Titans just. I could see why. Because, like, people like me, like, you know, you. Eh, fuck the show. But you go, well, later on, it goes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It gets better. They start finding their feet. I could see people like, well, okay. And I also think it's helped by Young Justice is a huge fan base. People are going in on that, and they're streaming this Titans thing just to see. And part of it is that I think that there is also that, like, the more of the shit we watch, the longer the service stays around.
True. True enough. Yeah, and I mean, I think
But it's
going
to be
Titans...
interesting to see how that works.
Yeah. I mean, and amazingly enough, my friend Paul, who likes Marvel and DC stuff, but he really does not like, he really despises anything that with a whiff of like edgelord sort of sensibility.
Okay.
Was prepared to absolutely hate Titans and found himself watching the whole thing and liking it. So
it weirdly works. Like I said, like there are times I really don't like it, but it also really weirdly works.
Yeah. Well, it's like I think I've said this to you before. Parts of it feel like what a 14-year-old boy thinks adult relationships and interactions are like, and when it does that, it kind of falls down pretty badly. But every so often, it feels like it feels just extremely real, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And
you know,
still
when
think,
they get out of their own way, it works really well.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, who knows?
Still love the Doom Patrol preview with all, like almost none of them with the original, the actual cast of the show.
That I mean, I know what I mean. We all know what happened there, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
That was just time pressure and everything just fucked up. But it still does. It makes me laugh. It's just one of these, like, that really was worst case scenario, wasn't it? Like, there is no way to get around that just not being a good thing for them.
Exactly. Yeah, it is to laugh.
Yes.
Is it to laugh? It is to laugh. Oh, speaking of questioning whether things are to laugh or not,
yes.
Today, I think it was today, there's a... first little teaser preview of the Birds of Prey characters.
I saw that, and I don't know how I feel about it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I like the characters, and I like generally the looks of the characters. The teaser itself seemed like a little bit of an odd... I don't know, they were just kind of standing around in a room with drapes.
Yeah, it was just a very quick, like, look at our cast, which is fine.
Yeah.
But, no, so I think it was that... Like, I really love... Cassandra Cain, like, as a character.
Mm-hmm.
And just making her this young, the cast, like, it just didn't feel... And it's just because, again, they were just quick shots, right? Like, nothing felt like, oh, this is going to be cool, these are going to be these cool characters, because you have no sense of how they're going to work.
Right.
But also, apparently it's going to take place before Suicide Squad?
Huh. Oh. Alright. That seems odd.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. For a couple of reasons, but okay,
yeah.
If that's what they want to do. I didn't realize that Ewan McGregor played Black Mask. Because Black Mask is such a batshit insane character.
It just that was one of those things. Though, just does Ewan McGregor just do anything if you ask him nicely?
Would you like to be twins on a Fargo show? Oh, would I? Yeah, that's... I don't know. Didn't he get bitten by a raccoon and... Was he hit by light? Like, what? Like, that's just... I don't get it. I do not get it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great actor, but I just... Yeah. He just seems to show up. Like, they might not have even asked him. He could have just shown up. I've just been like, so, do you have anything? Because I don't have anything to do this month. Like, well, we have this bit, I'll take it.
Can I be Black Mask? He's not in the show. I've written lines. I'll do it. Okay. So no, I'm sure. I mean, it might be just a complete clusterfuck, but I'm all in on this one. It looks delightful.
What was funny was for me, terrible. I woke up this morning, and the teaser dropped already, and I hadn't seen that bit. And someone was just like, "Oh, it's Ewan McGregor and whoever the other guy is." Like, it's these bad guys and these stills in Birds of Prey. And I was like, "Were they in the old Birds of Prey TV show?" Like, that's weird. And I'm like trying to reconcile that before I even looked at the images. I'm just like, I mean, I remember watching the show vaguely, but I remember Ewan McGregor. And then I realized that they meant the movie, like that's not out yet, instead of like the weird old '90s TV show that ran for a minute and a half. And I was,
I felt
both better and sad.
Wow.
Better because at least that didn't happen. Sad because I didn't want to remember that show.
There is a very weird point in time when superhero television was like Birds of Prey and Mutant X.
And Witchblade.
Witchblade. And there's that freaking immortal little joke from Middleman when Natalie Morales is like,
"Oh, your favorite character is Flash and Barry Allen and Jay Garrick."
Yeah, no, it wasn't that one. It was the she's going on about how she knows all the Canadian detective vampire shows.
Oh yeah,
and it's like, yep, those are that is a weird subgenre. That's a thing.
They tried a bunch of shows in the '90s. They shouldn't have, but they did.
They really shouldn't have, and even into the 2000s, they kept going. Yes. But you know, now we didn't even mention that The Gifted ended up. Did it? Has it?
No,
up?
It's taking a break this coming week.
Right.
I think it's going to 16.
Oh, okay. Because I thought, is this the finale? Because this is not a very good season finale. It's a good episode, but not really very climactic. Well, good to know. Where was I? But yeah, there's moving on from all that business. I thought The Good Place wrapping up its season bears mention.
Those motherfuckers.
I think we need to pull from the sort of the unofficial slogan of Person of Interest.
Mm-hmm.
This fucking show.
I will say one thing about the season finale in a way that the other season finales didn't do it for me. Hmm. But if this was the last episode of the show, I'd be perfectly happy.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to see where they go, but, like, this felt like mission statement and out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that man, people would have been just, like furious if they had said, "Okay,
sure.
Show's done. Goodbye, y'all." But, yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. It was kind of a perfect wrap-up, and I think part of it depends... And part of how you feel about this is how you're going to feel about Eleanor and Chidi together. Because I know that some people just don't buy into the relationship. And so having so much of it hang on that relationship was, I thought,
right,
something of a risky move. Because probably hopefully they thought to themselves, well, some people don't buy this, so we're not going to do it for some of the audience. But for those... For those for whom it works, it's going to just be, it's going to knock it out of the park.
Yeah, I like to think that they never concerned themselves with that.
Oh, me too, frankly. Yeah, I would like to think that as well.
Yeah. But as an actual episode, like, it was The Good Place, right? Like, yeah, I don't even know what to say about it. Like, it's just that fucking show. That's all I got.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I was sort of like thinking about sort of the modern, I was thinking about modern society, Adam. I was thinking about this modern world and the characters of The Good Place and how, and I thought to myself that The Good Place might be the most, I don't know how to put this, the most modern of all shows currently on television, like the one that is most preoccupied with the world at this particular moment, or this particular iteration of how we conduct ourselves in the world. And not just with the sort of the periodic philosophy lessons, although that's definitely a part of how that works. But I was thinking of the characters, and you've got Chidi, who is, and this is this part of his character is kind of unexplored, but he is sort of the product of Western, he's like the ultimate product of Western colonialism, which is a black academic who's made his study the sort of the moral and ethical foundation of his colonizers. Then you've got Tahani al-Jamil, who is, of course, part of that colonial heritage as well, turned into what is essentially the ultimate Instagram persona. Even though they don't really talk about it that way, but I mean, she is kind of like that. She's the ultimate aspirational figure who must like work always with the sort of under the shadow of her sister, the even more aspirational figure. And then you've got Jason and Eleanor, who are essentially, they are like modern millennial American dirtbags in a way that captured in a weirdly mocking but loving way that I think few shows have ever done. So
yeah, that kind of mocking and loving way that I would hearken back to Cheers.
Yes, speaking of Ted Danson, yes.
You know, maybe even something like Scrubs. It's just that, and again, you go back to Michael Shore shows, right? Like that was, that was Andy, you know, and what's her face?
Yeah.
How am I forgetting that character's name?
I don't know how I'm forgetting it too. But anyway, the characters are essentially
April.
Becoming.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. But anyway, these characters, I think, like especially with Eleanor, she's essentially kind of becoming a god. Like sort of a human god, like by becoming sort of but like still impersonating godhood, but getting there by impersonating it, which must be the most human thing I've ever heard of.
Right.
Anyway, that's my feeling so far on where the good place is and is going. So, you know.
Yeah,
also,
no, that's a really, you know, good way to look at it, frankly.
Also really, really weird is that the other thing I'm wondering is how much does Eleanor know of her past lives or of her afterlives? Because she seems
she knows
to know
all the Chidi stuff.
She knows all the Chidi stuff. Like she's been given some of those memories, but it seems like she's working with a sort of a massive like informational advantage over Chidi for sure. And now,
well, right, but I mean,
even
that's
more so
the
now.
Thing.
Yeah,
but that was always the thing, was that she got a glimpse into the past lives, and so that wouldn't have just stopped with just Chidi, because if she saw those scenes, they would include other things. So,
right.
Yeah, she has a leg up.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm really, really sort of wondering where they go next season with this. Because I'm on the edge of my seat on this one.
Yep. Well, you'll have a year.
Thanks.
Too bad. Suffer.
Suffer, I will.
Speaking of suffering, though, there's a movie you want to talk about. I'm insanely curious.
Oh, okay. Now, this was, I was kind of curious about this. It popped up on Netflix, and it looked like it was promising to be sort of a low rent John Wick, but with Mads Mikkelsen, and directed by Jonas Åkerlund, who I know him from doing music videos. He's done Lady Gaga music videos. And
Polar,
so on like
which
that.
Is adapted from a Dark Horse comic.
Yes, a graphic novel. Yeah, Polar. Yes. But I thought to myself, I bet this is probably not great, but you know, you'll sit it like a little movie will pop up on Netflix and it'll be kind of derivative, but it will be sort of a well-made sort of popcorn pleasure. But this looks like, just based on the first 10 minutes that I've been watching it, This looks like they've taken John Wick with one hand, just like reached into that movie and just grabbed a big ol' squishy handful of John Wick, and then reached in to take a big ol' squishy handful of Suicide Squad, and like specifically the trailer house version stuff that you see from Suicide Squad, and just mashed it together, and then just sort of thrown in like the like sleaziest, dumbest sort of visual sensibility you can possibly imagine. And
weird.
Yeah. And then
because like the comic is good.
The movie is not. Like the premise is great. The premise is great. Obviously, you know, there's, well, at least the movie, the premise is quite good. You know, Mads Mikkelsen plays an assassin who's nearing his retirement, and he's going to get a huge payday, but the organization called Damocles, if that tells you anything, you should not work for an organization called Damocles. They are not going to treat you well. But anyway.
I mean, you're not wrong.
It's in the name. Actually, I was watching Bumblebee as well, the Haley Steinfeld Transformers does Iron Giant film. And at one point, the two of the Decepticons show up on Earth and pretend to be like diplomats. And they're just, you know, the military is, you know, and politicians are welcoming them with open arms. And John Cena as a military guy is like, why are we trusting them? They're called Decepticons. It's in their name.
Oh my god! Like, I haven't seen this fucking movie, but I kind of want to, and now I really want to.
It is actually kind of delightful because it's literally, they basically said, let's make Iron Giant both Transformers.
Well, someone on Twitter mentioned talking about Bumblebee and not to move us away completely from Polar,
sure.
But that it was a horse movie but with a robot.
Yes, that's also.
And I was exactly, like, you know what? Like, they're saying it with one of these, like, you know, all you idiots who are just like, oh, fuck your horse movies. I'm like, no, I get that. And that makes me want to see it. Like.
Exactly. Now, the first part of the movie has sort of, like, transformery action, which is, it's done reasonably well. And it's like,
right.
Okay, I can watch this. But then it's, the action shifts to Steinfeld's character, Charlie, turns 18, it's 1987, she listens to the Smiths and so on and so forth. There's a lot of, like, pretty good music in this, for, you know, but although it does feel more like somebody remembering good, like, sort of remembering good music from the 80s rather than the actual shitty music of the 80s, but that's right.
Sure.
And then, so she has, like, adventures where, you know, she learns to bond with Bumblebee, and then Bumblebee saves her, and so on. It's also E.T.
Right.
Which
is also a horse movie. Like, it's all the same thing.
It's all the
and
same.
And that's fine.
And it is fine. And it's a pretty good, it's a pretty decent version of that sort of movie, and certainly the best Transformers film I think I've ever seen. Because
low ass bar.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not talking about the animated Transformers. That's its own thing.
Well,
but
yeah,
all
that,
the
come on.
Yeah, exactly. That, but of the live-action Transformers, Bumblebee just outstrips it by not really being a Transformers movie.
That's fair.
Yeah. But anyway, so back to Polar. Right, yeah, so he's working for Damocles, and the notion being that when you're 50 years old, you get the big payout. But, of course, it seems that Damocles is sending the dumbest Hot Topic assassins of all time to kill these people before they can get their big payday. And as far as I can tell, the movie is just like alternating scenes of Mads Mikkelsen hiding while the assassins are like, well, maybe he's here, and they go there and they kill people, and they're like, well, no, maybe he's here, and then they go there. It's literally just an excuse for really badly shot, just ugly ass scenes of like people shooting each other in the head. And I can't tell you how there's a character named Cindy who shows up in a leopard print bikini, but her name is spelled with an S. And when the guy who's going to die says, "What's your name, baby?" And she goes, "Cindy." Like, all of a sudden, like, just this horrible freaking sort of super shows up, goes Cindy with a bunch of fonts. And that's how all the supers look. Like, they're barely readable. And it's, oh my God. Just, I'm like, what? Like, I just think they thought, let's make this as shitty and bad.
They
and
tried
as, like,
for hyper stylized and they went too far.
They went too far. They went way too far. They could have done a better job had they just sort of like said, this is an absurd John Wickian premise and we're just going to go for it.
Right, like Hotel Artemis.
Yeah, except
which
Hotel
was not
Artemis.
Good, but
no.
It was enjoyable-ish.
It was enjoyable until they seemed to forget that they were making a movie somewhere.
That whole thing. That movie was like perfectly fine up until it wasn't. And up until it wasn't was not late enough in the game.
Yep. Up until they were like, we have no money. All right. Yeah, these are the movies in which I literally expect like the police from the Holy Grail to show up and like put their hand over the camera and that's it.
Right.
Movie's over. But yeah, no, that was bad.
Well, there you go.
And
it's a shame.
I'm not going to enjoy watching the rest of the movie.
Well, you don't have to watch the rest of the movie.
I'm probably going to do it though. And that's
why.
That I don't know. I got to see how he gets out of it. And here's the other thing: this freaking movie is 2 hours long. Like, why?
I got none of them.
The premise could be done in 90 minutes or less. The premise could be done in 10 minutes, but you know, that's the weird thing. It's clearly like this overly long, like practically premiseless bad film. I'm like, is there just mount the camera like maybe at a traffic stop for 15 minutes and just record traffic? Is that what's going to happen? Who knows? Who knows?
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. But I do, if you will indulge me further, I do have a pick of the week.
Hit me.
It's a new show called The Other Two.
Okay.
It's on Comedy Central. It's a half-hour sitcom. Well, not a sitcom. It's a half-hour comedy. And it's essentially about these two characters who are the older brother and sister of a 13-year-old internet musical sensation, a young kid who's gone viral with his YouTube hit "I Want to Marry You at Recess," and his name is Chase Dreams.
Wow!
And it is freaking hilarious because, of course, nice. You know, he is, and Ken Marino plays his agent Streeter, obviously Scooter Brown.
Well, I mean, you know, Ken Marino always makes things better.
He does, and it's just, as soon as he shows up, he's just, like, the desperation and the craziness and the arrogance just sort of come off him, but he barely has to do anything, because Marino knows that character, that sort of kind of character so well,
right,
that he just barely has to, like, even the tiniest little intonations in the voice are, like, just, you know, chef's kiss good. And meanwhile, the older siblings, the older brother is an aspiring actor whose big break is like getting an audition for a commercial as Man Who Smells Fart. And there's footage from the older sister works in, I think, real estate, but she too is looking for fame, and they're sort of reckoning with their lives, and they're probably going to make like a weird and terrible bid for fame. That's
gotcha.
Simple.
Well,
so, yeah.
Speaking of of shows, but not good ones.
Oh, uh-huh.
I was surprised when I got hit by a bunch of ads on like Twitter, Facebook, like everywhere I saw a bunch of ads for Future Man.
Oh.
Season 2?
Season 2 of Future Man.
And I was like, did enough people actually watch that to make doing a second one worth it?
Okay, I'm gonna tell you something that you're not going to believe about Future Man, because I watched the whole first season. The first 4 episodes are terrible.
Yes, they
are. Just dumb as hell. 5th episode is reasonable. Then somewhere around the 6th or 7th episode, it suddenly becomes a good show. Huh. And I know even if you believe me, I know you're probably not going to like run out and watch the rest of Future Man.
No. I mean, I again, like, it can be a good show without me watching it. Like, that's fine. Yeah. I just, that at least makes me feel better, just because I'd only seen like 4 or 5 episodes, and I was just like, why would anyone want to be like, let's get more? So at least I get, like, they get better, they find their feet. That's all good. That's all I needed.
You literally sounded there like your friends had taken you to like a shitty buffet restaurant, going, "Oh, you gotta try this place," and it's like the food is like insane.
I've been in a Sizzler.
There we go. And you're sitting down, and somebody's going, "Let's get more." I'm like, "Why?"
Yeah, why? No, I've been in a Sizzler, sir. I have seen this phenomenon in action. There was actually a time. And I don't know, I chalked this thing up to a New York thing. There have been a few places I've gone and will occasionally return to that not that I consider them fancy, okay? I was never like, ooh, Sizzler. But that I considered going to them a treat in this weird way because we didn't have them in Manhattan.
Right. Yeah, okay, I get that.
So, like, you know, there was a Denny's in Manhattan once for like a minute and a half. Because a shitty fucking Denny's ain't gonna compete with a New York diner, let me tell you that.
Yeah, oh, no joke.
But, like, you know, like, IHOP, or Denny's, or Sizzler, like, there's always that thing for me of just the, I kinda wanna go to that, cause I'll have those. You know what I mean? Like, there was a Sizzler up in Yonkers, that, like, occasionally there's, like, I had a friend who lived up there, and every, like, you know, year or two, it'd be the let's go to Sizzler, and I was always like, yay, because it was a thing that I couldn't get any other time.
Absolutely.
And it was never good. I was never like, yay, Sizzler, because the food is so delicious. It was more like, yay, here's this different experience.
Right. Yeah, the experience of Sizzler.
That hasn't killed me, you know. It's
right. I don't think I've ever been to a Sizzler.
Huh? Yeah, I they're not great. They're not great.
I mean, I think they have them in Canada, but there's a weird phenomenon in Canada in which there are all kinds of franchises that will be common throughout the States. I don't know, like a P.F. Chang's. Like, I've been to a P.F. Chang's in Amarillo. If there's a P.F. Chang's in Amarillo, there's a P.F. Chang's everywhere in the States, right? So, anyway, but I'm sure there's one in Canada, but it's probably like one in Vancouver and one in Toronto. They have this sort of, there's maybe a few scattered around the greater Toronto area. So the consequence being that there's all these sorts of like chain restaurant things that I never go to because I don't live anywhere near the Toronto Vancouver axis. So, yeah, but, yeah, P.F. Chang's, not so great.
Well, that's one, too. Like, I hadn't been to one ever, P.F. Chang's. And then I was in one in Seattle, because there's the one not too far from the convention center. Which, if I'm in Seattle, I'm usually downtown at the convention center, because I'm going to a convention. And I ended up there, actually not during a convention. I was in Seattle for a completely different reason, for once. But somehow I ended up in the same neighborhood. And a friend was like, oh, we should go to P.F. Chang's. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, that sounds scary. And they're not fucking bad.
Yeah, they're okay.
I mean, they're not like, holy shit, like, right home. But they're not bad. They're fine.
They're fine. I think premium mediocre is really the adjective that applies. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to them occasionally, like, on this coast, and they're fine. I don't think there's one in Portland, though.
I've told you my P.F. Chang story, or perhaps maybe I have and you may have forgotten it.
I don't think you have.
Well, I'll now tell you my P.F. Chang story. It concerns the P.F. Chang's in Amarillo that I referenced earlier in this podcast. Anyway, so I was in Amarillo, Texas, and I was there for work and with a camera guy, and we said, let's get some tea, walked into the P.F. Chang's. And the waitress came up and she was like the friendliest person. She was like, welcome to P.F. Chang's, y'all. I mean, she's doing accent stuff and everything, which I wasn't accent stuff. It was just her accent.
Right.
And then she says, you know, and then she launches into an explanation of the sauces and how they work. And she said, well, have you all been to a P.F. Chang's before? And I said, no, I've never been to a P.F. Chang's. And she was not prepared for that response. Like, the answer is, yes, I've been to a P.F. Chang's before. And then she can say, ah, oh, you know about it already, and probably explains right. it anyway. So, but in this case, when I said, no, I haven't been to a P.F. Chang's, she just sort of stopped. And, like, she just got this, like, sort of confused, kind of blank look very briefly. And then said, well, but there's P.F. Chang's everywhere. And I said, not where I'm from. And she's like, but they're everywhere. I'm like, I don't want to have this conversation anymore because your mind is blown by the idea of some place on Earth that does not have a P.F. Chang's. Right. And I think maybe she thought I was from some impossible exotic location like Austin, Texas. I don't know what she thought. But then I just went, I'm from Canada. And she's like, oh. And that's when she sort of felt bad for me and my P.F. Chang's-less existence.
I can see it. I just, Jesus. No, actually, because there's, when I was in San Jose, I was giving a paid talk. Afterwards, DJ was with me because, you know, we were both there. That's what we were doing. And we go back to our hotel, and we're like, okay, the hotel we're in has no restaurant.
Ugh.
And we hadn't eaten. So we're like, well, we'll just go walk and find a place, because we're near a hotel. There's obviously going to be that has no food. There's obviously going to be a place. Forget that we're in San Jose, which assumes, A, you have a car, and B, San Jose isn't built for humans.
Fair enough.
It's built for people who work for Apple. I don't know. But, so, like, we're walking, and we're like, well, there's a Popeyes. We're like, we want something it's a little bit better than just fucking fast food. And so we see, like, there's a P.F. Chang's. We're like, I guess that's what we're doing. And again, it was fine.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most years when I do Emerald City now, it's one of those default choices of, like, you can't think of anything. You have to go get dinner, and you have, like, 15 people, and no one can decide on anything. And, oh, God, just go to the fucking P.F. Chang's. It's fine. Like, I think that's what a lot of these chains are good for, is you have a bunch of people. You're not going to upset anyone.
Exactly.
Whereas I refuse to go to the Cheesecake Factory ever again.
I have never been to a Cheesecake Factory.
I have been to a Cheesecake Factory once in my life. It was actually at a convention in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing you have to remember about working conventions is that hopefully you have breakfast. But then
yeah.
You're not eating until after the show's closed that night. Like, maybe you're going to grab some kind of lunch, but in general, like, you know, we just bring, like, seriously, sacks of, like, you know, we bring a massive amount of, like, power bars and some fruit. Mm. And that's what you eat during the day.
Hmm.
So you're working this, like, 12-hour day. At the end of it, you'd like some fucking food. And so someone, like, there was, like, a group of, like, 15 of us was like, we should just go to fucking Cheesecake Factory because they give you a lot of food. And again, it's perfectly fine. Like, it's just genera food, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in these, like, massively upsetting quantities, to where we were all walking back to the hotel, like, lamenting that we had gone there.
Oh,
just, we all just felt just terrible about our choices in life. And there's one in Seattle, like, right across the street from the convention center. And every year, I'm just like, nope, not doing it. Can't do it again.
I was in an airport once, I think somewhere in the States, might have been Houston, and I met a woman who loved the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh, there are people who adore it. I can't do it ever again. That's good. There's only one chain that I've never been in, and I refuse to ever go to if I have anything to say about it.
Is it Friendly's?
No, I've been in Friendly's.
No, that's one place I still want to go. I've never been to Friendly's.
There was one in the Staten Island Mall when I was growing up. We used to go stay in Staten Island for like a week or two.
Okay.
My grandmother's place. So I'd end up in the Friendlies. No, Olive Garden. There's an Olive Garden in Times Square in New York.
Jesus.
And I'm like, if you're in New York and your best shot at Italian is the Olive Garden, get the fuck out. Just there was no excuse. Like, almost every other chain restaurant I could abide for, like, whatever weird reason, I don't mind them. I'm like, oh, you're going to go to a fucking wedding? It's fine, whatever.
But here's a straw. Go suck on the East River.
Right.
Jesus.
And even now, like, I'm just like, nope, won't do it. Like,
oh
just, I refuse. It's just, it's a point of pride now, I guess, that I've never been in an Olive Garden. I refuse to ever go if I can help it.
I've been in Olive Garden once. I was trying not to eat. I wasn't feeling well. I was traveling. I wasn't feeling well, so I was trying to like not eat a lot of meat. So I went to the Olive Garden and found a surprising amount of their dishes had meat in them. So I was like, is there anything just like straight up vegetarian? And this was Texas. They freaking panicked. They're like, like they literally like the you could see. I don't know why people panic when I ask in restaurants in Texas, but this is another one. This is just right outside Dallas, I think. And they did not know what to do at first. And they had to consult the menu. And I'm like, really?
See, now I'm missing. Back in New York, there was a Italian place that delivered to my office. That did. It was just the best, simplest little lunch. It was just ziti.
I was going to say, was it ziti? Nice.
Well, but it was ziti with some olive oil, a mathon of garlic, and just broccoli.
Oh, nice.
So it's good. It's very light,
mm-hmm.
but it's very hearty at the same time somehow.
Yeah, a good ziti would. Yeah, I can see it.
Olive oil, some garlic, some broccoli. Like, I keep meaning to make that here, and I'm just like, nah, if I'm going to like fucking start cooking pasta, I'm going to do it upright.
Yeah.
And anyway. We've gone way off the rails tonight.
Oh yeah, well you know this is what our audience pays for.
Fair enough. God. Well, it's like there's a place here that is apparently a chain, and I didn't know it was a chain. I ran to one in Seattle. I didn't know it was a chain at first. And it's called the Yard House. And again, like you don't go to the Yard House for the food. It's fine. It's edible.
Yeah. Sounds to me like you'd go there for the beer, maybe, or something.
Well, they have something like over 100 taps.
Yes.
But they also generally have at least one Belgian quad on tap. And if you've never actually went into a good Belgian quad, understand these things start at like 11%.
Yeah. No, yeah.
But finding anywhere that has a fucking like quad on tap is really hard.
Yeah, it's literally. I've seen plenty of places that'll have like you know, a bottle of it, but tap, jeez.
Yeah, no, and there have been a few quads that I've had. Like I've bought them in bottles afterwards because they're still hard to find, but you can, and they just taste so much worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but man, a good quad is just it's a thing.
Nice. Well, that's good. That is good to know.
Because I'm not a big beer person. Like, that's the problem. It's like, the beers I like tend to not be the beers that everyone else likes.
Right.
Like, I tend to hate IPAs.
Oh, then you don't like any of the beers.
Right. And I don't tend to like stouts.
Oh, then you don't like any of the other beers.
Right. Like, I'm okay with most pale ales, and I like me a really good red. But not many people have reds.
Yeah, they'll have a red, but usually I find often when people say they have like a red ale, what that means is they've got like a beer just with caramel color in it.
Right.
Which,
but you know, luckily Portland, there's two or three places, including the Yard House, that have like a decent selection of reds, and again, the you know Yard House has a quad or two. The thing with the Yard House is they change out their taps frequently. Like, every, like, 6 months or so, you'll be like, yeah, let's go back there. They have this, like, quad that I really love. They're not serving that ever again. Not as funny as there's a place with great Cajun food. Should you ever come to Portland? Really good Cajun food. Whose website is just a webcam pointed at the beerless chalkboard. Because it changes throughout the night.
Wow.
Like, they tend to just buy stuff in, like, one keg. When they're out of it, they're out of it, and then they just roll something else in.
Interesting.
But they'll have, like, 30-odd beers on tap at any time. It's just, like, in a given day, it will change three or four times. So it's always a fun game going there. Be like, what's, you know, they'll give you this big beer list, like this big piece of paper, and it's like full of like scratched out notes.
Right. Nice. Oh, okay. Yeah. This sounds worth going to. Regina, where I live is,
yeah.
Well, it's sort of a beer city. I mean, if you open a bar, if you open like a pub, you probably will never go out of business, no matter how bad you are at it.
Gotcha. Because
people in the city just want to like drown their you know their neurons in beer. But the thing is, there's less good beer here than even in like a larger moderately sized city that isn't that concerned with beer. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but there's one place here. It's a brewery called Multinational. And they just make ales. That is it. If you don't drink, they have kombucha as well, on tap.
Nice.
But the ales they make are just spectacular. Like just like 9 times out of 10, you're going to have something that you're going to be like, wow, that is one of the best versions of whatever kind of ale
nice.
I could expect. So if you ever come here, I'll take you to Multinational.
Yeah, and again, like, and keep in mind also that should, you know, you come here and we decide, well, you know, A, drinking at my place, which there's a large selection of whiskey,
hey.
But should you decide that you need a bigger selection of whiskey, there is the Whiskey Kitchen.
I would be disappointed if the Whiskey Kitchen did not have lots of whiskey.
I like going to the Whiskey Kitchen and, like, finding new whiskeys that I then want to, like, buy for the house. Ooh. That's what I use it as, like, research.
Interesting.
They also have decent barbecue.
Okay, well, I'm sold. Good whiskey and barbecue. That sounds like an ideal restaurant for me.
Yeah. So, yeah, Portland is very much a drinking town, frankly.
Yes. So
which is, like, how little I drink is kind of funny. Anyway, we are past the hour mark.
We are past the hour mark. So, in conclusion, don't watch Polar.
Right.
Do watch the other two.
Okay. And don't go to Olive Garden.
And don't go to Olive Garden. But do want to go to Friendly's.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So we'll cue some music.
Cue some music.